Good evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have young adult author sensation, Pentip Dunn. Pentip is a New York Times bestselling author of YA fiction. She graduated from Harvard University, magna cum laude, with an AB in English Literature and Language. She received her JD at Yale Law School, where she was an editor of the Yale Law Journal. Pentip is represented by literary agent Beth Miller of Writer's House. Her debut novel, Forget Tomorrow, won the RWA Rita Award for Best First Book. Her other novels include The Darkest Lie and the forthcoming Remember Yesterday. She lives with her husband and children in Maryland, and you can learn more about Pentip and her books at www.pentipdunn.com. And the link is right there on this homepage. And welcome, Pentip, to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Tabitha. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm really glad we got you on the show. It was kind of, when she sent it, I was like, oh, yeah, hey, woo! You know, as a big follower of the RWA Ritas and stuff, I was like, yeah. So I've had, like, several Rita winners from this year, and I feel really special now.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
So I was telling you before the show that I actually read The Darkest Lie, which, you know, is probably, it isn't one of the, you know, romance, but it was really intriguing and kept me really flipping pages into the night. So, you know, do you have a background in, well, the other ones you were telling me that are more like more science fiction ish. But do you have a mystery thing? Do you like mysteries a lot?
Yeah, I do. I think that I write in two genres right now, young adult science fiction and young adult thriller. And what all of my books have in common is that there is kind of a suspense thriller thread. And it's just, I don't know, I just like it. It keeps things exciting for me. And also, the other thing that all of my books have in common is that there's a very strong romance thread as well.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, when you balance the thriller with the romance, then you have a wider audience in the YA group. As a young adult librarian, I always found it, I found it really rewarding when I could hand something like Legend or Cinder to a boy and they enjoyed it as much as the girl, you know, because there was action and there was intrigue and there was, you know, the suspense of what was going to happen next. But, you know, there was a strong romance going on through the whole thing too, that they just were oblivious to, I'm sure.
Or maybe they're not oblivious and they're just pretending to be oblivious.
That's true too. But it was always fun because it was things that, you know, a 15-year-old would look at me and like, you know, you really like it, but it's a girl with an android girl with a shoe, you know, a Cinderella slipper. I'm like, but don't think of it like that. Just give it a shot and come back. And they'd be like, oh, okay, this one, you know. And that was always really, I always loved to be able to give them books that were probably, I'm not going to say you write books for girls, but you know what your audience is. But the boys, when they grab them and really enjoy them like that, I love it. So good for you, because we have a hard time.
That's so exciting to hear. And, like, what's really funny for me is that you're right. When I was writing these books, my target audience was, you know, young adults or also older adults as well, because, frankly, all I read are YA books, and that's what I love. But what has been really interesting for me is Forget Tomorrow in particular, I have a lot of 10-year-old boys who are fans, and that came as a total surprise to me. But then ever since the book was published, I've had several moms write me and say, you know what, this is my 10-year-old boy's favorite book ever. And I was like, wow. I had no idea that this book would appeal to that audience, but it certainly does. The Darkest Lie is a little bit for older teens, much more, so I wouldn't recommend that to any 10-year-old. But Forget Tomorrow the audience seems to run the gamut from, like I said, the 10-year-olds all the way to the adults. So that's been interesting for me.
That's really awesome because it's so embracing. And I love, that's why I love young adult literature, because your audience is so much more than just the average teen. You know, you've got the kids who do find it, who maybe don't, how do I say this? It's kind of like the classics. You know, when you read the classics as a teenager, you don't have the kind of experiences in life that you can really truly get everything going on in there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But a 10-year-old may not get all the innuendos with romance or anything like that. However, they're getting enough out of that book where they really enjoy it. But then you've got the moms who get it all, you know, and they're loving the book too. So it's such a huge audience. And I always loved being a young adult librarian just because of that, because if I could, I could hand anybody almost any range of age a YA book and have them, well, except for a few, have them enjoy it for where they're at. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what was really funny for me, so I have a daughter who is in elementary school, and I think a couple years ago I was talking to one of the moms, and she kind of like, you know, she found out that I was a YA author, and she was like, oh my gosh, like, I love YA books, but I never tell anybody that. And so then after that, I actually found out that there were 5 or 6 moms in the class who felt the exact same way. They were all, I guess they called them closet YA readers, where they just devoured them, and they never told anybody. And then because I was a YA author, everyone felt like they could tell me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's all I read. That's all my friends read. And so we actually, for a while there, formed a little book club. So it was really fun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just a fun thing. But and I was like, you know what? Like, if you were in the book, like the YA book community, like all these adults read young adult books, and they don't feel any strangeness about it whatsoever. So
right, and they shouldn't, because I mean, the themes in YA books are so universal. You know, of course, the drama might be a little heavier and in the teen years.
It might be a little bit different. But I have to say that when I'm writing, I write it all comes from the heart. I don't try to, like, age it down or age it up or anything. Yeah. And so I think that if I were ever to write an adult book, and in fact I have written adult books before, they aren't published, but before this I have written adult books, like, the language that I use, the thought process, none of those things are different. It's just more that the situation might be a little bit different. That's all.
Yeah, that's, I understand that. Did you start out writing YA, or was this?
No, not at all. Mostly because I didn't really know that the genre existed. Like, when I was a teenager myself, I went straight from, like, middle grade books to adult books. And I think that that's because back then it just wasn't, you know, books did exist, but just wasn't a big genre. And so I first started off writing, my first real book. I have a book that I don't consider, my very, very first book, I don't really consider to be a real novel, but my first real book was a chick lit. And then I wrote a contemporary romance, and then I wrote kind of a literary woman's fiction. And then I believe the next book was a young adult. And that was because I read The Hunger Games. That book completely changed my life. And I mean that very sincerely. And the reason for it is that, you know, like I said before, I was jumping from genre to genre, kind of trying to find a home for my voice. And then as soon as I read that book, I said, this is what I need to be writing. This is what I want to be writing. I have found my home. And so ever since then, I have never looked back. I've only written young adults since then.
That's awesome. And that's the story of so many authors, too, to, you know, kind of feel out the different place to kind of find where you fit, you know, where you feel natural. And
And like, not to close the door on, you know, me writing adult or, you know, even middle grade or something in the future, because I think that, I mean, I love exploring. I love experimenting. I love trying new things and challenging myself. So I think it's very likely that I might write that in the future. But as of right now, I think my you know, my first love, my true home is in young adult.
Yeah. So do your kids, do they read your books?
Not yet. My oldest is 9. And she's read all the Harry Potter books and she loves them. And so I've told her actually that I think that she's old enough now to read it. And she's still a little bit scared of, and I'm talking about Forget Tomorrow. Like I said, The Dark Life is for older teens, but the concept scares her a little bit. And so I think that, that book is about a future world where you send memories back to your younger self, and my heroine sees a vision of her future self killing her younger sister. And so what I always tell parents who ask me, I said, if the concept doesn't scare them, the book doesn't get any scarier than that. It's not violent, there's no sex, there's no language. It's very appropriate for a 10-year-old, but they just have to feel not scared about that concept. But she was really cute, though, because one of the boys in her class was reading the book, and then she came home and she was like, Mommy, how is it going to look if, my classmates read the book and, the author's daughter hasn't read it? And so she was feeling really guilty about it. But I said, you know what, honey, it's okay. Whenever you're ready, you can read it. No pressure. Yeah. And for now, she loves reading, so she's happy reading the book she's interested in.
Oh,
so whenever she's interested, I will let her.
Well, I could see her dilemma there. I haven't read it yet. What should I do?
I know, because she's like, I can't have my classmates talking about this book, and I don't know what it's about. But what she did do the very day that I got the box of finished books for the first time, she picked it up, she turned it to the last page, and she read the last page.
Oh.
And so, for those people who have read the book, it ends in a pretty big cliffhanger. So she goes around saying, I know how the book ends. And so she runs around telling people that, even though she hasn't actually read the book.
That's funny. I got one over you.
Yeah.
That's cute.
And then I'm just like, don't blurt it out, honey. Don't ruin it for everybody.
So how did you, you have a very big educational background, and obviously you were into literature and things before, but when did you decide that you were going to take up writing and move towards that
I've always wanted to be an author. That has been my lifelong dream. And in fact, I remember my first grade teacher, giving the class assignment, write down 3 things you want to be when you grow up. And my number one thing in first grade was to be an author. And so that has always been a dream of mine. But I didn't actually pursue it until I wrote my first book after college. And, the reason for it is that I was always kind of discouraged against it because writing was not practical. I was supposed to be doing studying something that would actually get me a, sensible job, with regular salary, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I didn't, because of that, before I was a English major, I was actually an economics major for 2 years. And then I was just I really love this. This is what I really want to do. And so then I was an English major. I wrote my first book after college. Like I said before, it was a complete disaster. I don't think it had any kind of a plot. If it did, it was very vague. It was a very vague plot. And then I went to law school, got my law degree, became a lawyer. Throughout that whole time, I still really, really wanted to write, and I would. I wrote in law school. I would get up and write 2 hours before going to my job at the law firm. And it wasn't until I actually left. I left the legal profession because of a physical disability, actually. Mm-hmm. I have fibromyalgia, RSI, and what that basically means is that I can't type on a keyboard without intense debilitating pain. So, you know, so I got injured at the law firm. I was flat on my back for 6 months. And, you know, it just hurt too much to even lift my head up. And so the first real book I wrote after that first disaster of a book, I wrote that while I was on long-term disability. I would lay flat on my back underneath a glass coffee table. I would have my laptop open on the coffee table so I could see it underneath, and then I would dictate into my microphone. So,
oh, my.
that was my first real book that I wrote. And so then after that, I was like, you know what? I could have gone back to the law. I could have made it work. It would have been difficult. I could have made it work, though. But I said, I think that my body is telling me that I've been on the wrong track all along, and what I really need to do is to pursue this passion that I've had all my life. And my body was just telling me, like, no, you can't keep doing what you're doing. Like, it's not right for you.
Right.
And so then I left the legal profession, and I've never looked back.
And isn't it refreshing to do something that you're really passionate about?
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. Of course, it still took a long time. Like, between that
and
I just described to you in my first published book was, gosh, I think 10 years. So it did take a long time. I had, you know, I had 3 children in the meantime as well. So I wasn't writing that entire time. But
Yeah, you get a little busy when you have kids.
Yeah, a little bit.
So do you still dictate?
I do occasionally. The way I write now, so I used to dictate everything, but I got my first iPhone, I believe, 5 years ago, and so I basically do almost all of my writing on the cell phone. So I've written my last, I think it's my last 6 books that way. So I write on the cell phone, or I dictate into the cell phone. And I revise on the cell phone, and it's only when I need to do revisions for my editor and they need track changes is the only time I will use the keyboard. And so everything before that stage is 100% on the cell phone.
Wow, you should be on an ad for Apple. That's amazing.
Well, it's funny. I type really fast now because I'm used to it, and my husband always makes fun of me because he says that, you know, because I'll write anywhere. Like, I'll go to, you know, library, in the carpool line, at the doctor's office, and then he says everyone's always like looking at me and thinking that like I'm texting like a teenager or something. And I'm like, I'm not actually texting. I'm actually working. It just looks like I'm texting really speedily.
Well, that's good though. You've got now you have the eye hand coordination down like perfectly. So that's good.
Yeah, I text. And, well, I type on the phone fast, and so I end up texting really fast. And so whenever I text my friends, they're like, oh, wow, like that was really fast. But, like, autocorrect,
like, I've been doing it forever. Yeah.
Yeah, autocorrect is my friend. I didn't realize until I had accidentally turned the autocorrect off, like, how much I rely on it. And the reason why I can use a cell phone is because and I have to lock it in portrait position, because even landscape, the keys are too far apart, and that creates too much pain. And then people say, oh, why don't you, like, use an iPad? I'm like, no, like, even then, the keys are too far apart.
Yeah.
But when it's in portrait position, if you can imagine that keyboard, it's so tiny. And so I can, you know, move my thumbs there without causing the fibromyalgia pain. And that's the reason I can do it.
That's really... that's really awesome. I mean, it's great that you have found a technology that works for you like that, and you're still able to do it. I applaud you.
I'm so happy. I have to tell you, I dictated for years, and I always hated every single moment of it. And the voice dictation software has gotten a lot better. I think the first time I used it was in 1998. I first got this injury. I was a junior in college, and I got re-injured at the law firm. But the technology has improved tremendously, but I just never felt right, you know, speaking my words. Like, I was so much more comfortable with my hands. I do have to tell you a funny story, though. So before I wrote the young adults, I was writing that contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. And I had to include a sex scene because it was an adult contemporary romance. And I mm-hmm. really, really, really didn't want to. Like, that's not something I'm comfortable with. But then imagine trying to dictate a sex scene, because that was before I had the cell phone. So I was still dictating. And I was just so embarrassed to do this, even in a room by myself. And so
right.
one day I was just like, okay, listen, like, if you want to be a writer, you want to achieve this dream, you just have to do this. Even if no one reads it, you just have to do it. So I, like, locked the doors and then had to dictate this sex scene, like, saying these words out loud. Oh, my gosh. It was such a moment in my life.
Yeah, I would have hid in the closet for sure.
Oh gosh, it was so embarrassing, even for myself, even though nobody was around, but just the fact that I had to say it out loud.
And then the question there is, did the software pick up the correct words for certain things?
Well, you know, even then I did not use very explicit words. That's just not I would be way too embarrassed for that. But I don't know. You know, the funny thing is, you can train it to recognize certain words, and, you know, because, like, the more you use the voice recognition,
uh-huh.
it gets used to your speech, your
okay.
speech patterns. It gets used to it's very smart. Like, it gets used to, like, contextually, it knows that you like to use sentences like this, and so it can guess what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
So even if it didn't recognize words like that in the beginning, I think you could yes. Like, soon
if
enough
you
it would.
A lot of those things.
Yes.
That's terrible. we've had interesting conversations on this show with historical romance authors about, you know, proper vocabulary for certain times, especially for the things that they call certain body parts and things like that. So,
oh my gosh,
interesting.
Yeah.
It's been interesting, but I can imagine the software, like, I'd bust out laughing if I had to say some of the stuff.
Yeah, I either would or I just wouldn't say them. That is one of the reasons why I love young adult, because I don't have to write things like that.
Right. Yeah. I love, you know, I read the crud out of adult romance, but sitting down to write it is a whole other story, for sure. And then imagining your family reading it.
Oh yeah. What's so funny is that I have, you know, a lot of my critique partners write romance, and what one of my critique partners loves to tell the story where she was writing an erotica, and I was critiquing it, and this really hot scene, and I'm like, my critiques were like about the commas and how, like, structurally the scene would work better if this happened and this happened, and it was all approaching it through a very, like, you know, structural and, you know, grammatical and whatever, and it was just so funny to her that this, like, young adult author was telling her all these ways to improve her scene. And I was right, too. It did improve it.
Yeah. You just can go into the details because, yeah, it's just, yeah. That, for me, that requires a little bit of wine. And then after that, I might lose it up. Yeah, but, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So tell us just a little bit about Forget Tomorrow in the city, and, you know, where it starts, kind of where it's going to with your new book, that it's coming out. I can't. I'm a horrible host.
So
comes out
see.
Soon.
Okay, I'm sorry. What was the question? Tell us a little bit about Forget Tomorrow and where it's going.
Yeah. Where
okay.
the series?
Well, it's,
you know,
it's
kind of go.
Yeah, it's a trilogy. The first two books are out. The first book, Forget Tomorrow, and the second book is called Remember Yesterday, and that actually just came out a month ago. And I also published a novella, Entangled published a novella, and that came out on Halloween. And I'm working on the third book now, and that will come out next October. That book is
oh, okay.
right now titled Seize Today. And the interesting thing about the series is that it is a trilogy, so the story does continue with each book, but I have a different heroine in each book.
Oh, okay.
And the second book actually takes place 10 years after book one. So in book one, there's the heroine and her little sister, who is six, and then book two is the little sister, and she's 10 years later, so she's a teenager now.
Okay.
Like I mentioned earlier in the show, the premise is that it's about a future world where you can send memories back to your younger self. And in the first book, my heroine Callie sees her future self killing her younger sister. And the cast of characters more or less remains the same with each book. So even
mm-hmm.
though you are reading a different heroine's viewpoint, you still get all the same characters that you read about and loved from the previous book. So it's
okay.
been so much fun writing this series. I feel that these books really are the books of my heart. Like, they're very, very close to me. So I just love them.
Where do you come up with your, I don't know, basically, are you a person that comes up with are you a character person, or do you have like a general like idea of what you want to write a story about first?
Well, for my science, this is a little different depending on which genre I'm writing. So
mm-hmm.
for my science fictions, I usually come up with the world first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, in this series, the world is, someplace, something that you can, a place where you can send memories back to your younger self. My next science fiction series also started with the world. And that one came about, that world is a world of eaters and non-eaters. So for years, my husband and I would say to each other after having a big meal, like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could transfer our calories to someone else via a pill? And
uh-huh.
one day I was just like, wow, that would be a really cool idea for a book. And so in this series, it's called Fit to Die, there's two class of people in society, the eaters, because they can eat and they can convert the food into calories much more efficiently, and then the non-eaters
mm-hmm.
who just take a pill, and that's how they get their nutrients. But that's my
wow.
next... Wow. I mean, that's not coming out until, gosh... So book three is next October 2017. So that's coming. The first book's coming out October 2018. So it's not,
oh, wow.
it's not for a while. But that was actually the first book I sold. So it's Entangled bought that book as well. And the first book I sold, it was not – I actually wrote Forget Tomorrow before I wrote Fit to Die. But I sold that one first, and then – when my editor and publisher, Liz Pelletier, read Forget Tomorrow, she, loved it, and she was like, I want this to be your debut. And so then we kind of switched things around. And
mm-hmm.
since I had to do the whole series first, that's why Fit to Die got pushed back. But
right.
I love that series as well, so I can't wait for people to read that as well.
Awesome.
And that's two books, so that will be a sequel to that one as well.
It sounds like you've got just the corner on the market in the science fiction department for YA for a while, then. That's good.
Yeah. So then the sequel to that is October 2019. So
okay, so the next year.
I'll be having a science fiction on the market, like, for a few years. And then my contemporary thrillers, I have The Darkest Line, which you read, that came out this
mm-hmm.
summer. And then next summer, I have another book coming out called Girl in Between. I'm super excited about that one. That one features a Thai-American heroine, and I'm Thai. And never thought I would be able to write and publish a book that featured a heroine who looked like me. So this book is about a girl who's caught between cultural worlds and what happens to her when a stalker tries to steal her identity. So
oh, wow.
It's very close to my heart. So I'm super excited about that.
And I want to talk to you about diversity in YA. Let me put the phone number out. If anybody wants to call in, it is 347-633-9609. And you can call in to say hi or if you have any questions for Pen Tip. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, because that's just a huge thing. It is a huge thing. And being a young adult librarian and understanding that there are so many kids of so many different backgrounds and everything, persuasion, everything. I understand. I think it's very great that you've come up, that you're going to write a book that features someone who is marginalized. You know, you're not one of the, you're not the pure white bread kid in every book. So what do you think is the thing that needs to be done more in young adult? We've had a huge influx of diverse books. But what do you think still lacks? Where is it that we're missing a beat there?
I mean, I think that we, like, right now, the Own Voices campaign is really strong, and I do think that more than just diverse books, we need to have diverse books from the very authors who are in that same group, because I do think that as much research as you can do and, you know, it's, and I think that, and I'm not saying that non-diverse people shouldn't write these. I think that they can, and I think they can very well. But I think that there is just something about having lived the experience that, you know, you can really represent it in a
authentic,
true and all authentic way. Yes.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
I mean, I think that just, I think we need, I still think we need to do more of that. I think that people need, I hope that it becomes more popular, but not as a trend, but just because these are also important books, that I hope that people don't see it like, oh, you know, like, this is just a trend that, like, comes and goes. I think that it needs, I would love for it to be just incorporated as part of mainstream reading.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that part of the, I don't know if it's been the book marketing world or what, has made things a trend. And there are good points to that, because you want them to get the recognition and you want the books to get out in the hands of kids. However, you don't want them to fall off, you know. You don't want them to okay, you wrote your great book and now it's not important anymore. We're gonna move on to something else.
You certainly don't want a publisher to say, oh, you know what, well, we already have one book that features a black heroine. We can't put another one on our list. Like,
right.
You certainly don't want there to be, like, you know, like, just for it to be a quota to be filled or something to be checked and then say, oh, well, we already have a book like that. We don't need another one. Like, it shouldn't.
Right. Exactly.
You know, but
exactly.
It's hard. It's a difficult time, I think, in publishing right now as we're making this transition. But you know what? Like, as difficult as it is, I'm so excited to be a part of it, because when I, you know, back to that six-year-old girl, I grew up believing that I would never be able to write a book about a Thai girl. I just, and it wasn't even something that I was sad about. It was just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, all the books that I read when I was a kid had Caucasian characters. And so for me,
right.
It was just, that was the default. And so the fact that, you know, something, even though we are in a time of transition and we still have a lot of work to do, the fact that this book will exist, that it will be published, is just, it's phenomenal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Really is. So,
I agree.
I'm excited.
I'm excited for you. I think it's wonderful. And I think you're spot on when you say that we need more people writing from a place of authenticity where, you know, they've lived it. They know it. And we do have that quite a bit, but I think there's still work to do. I know that when I was a young adult librarian, I was in a very wealthy, affluent area in a public library, but we had a large and growing population of people from the Middle East and from India. Because I was in the Woodlands. It was near Houston. It was petroleum. There was lots of engineers moving into the area. And, you know, I didn't have, there's not that much to give them. You know, there's just not that much. And I felt kind of bad. You know, they were into everything and they didn't, you know, teenagers aren't, they're not that picky. However, I would have liked to have given them some great fiction that they could identify with a little more than, you know, than just the Caucasian typical story, because they need that. They moved here from another country. They need to make feel like they're part of something, and that they belong. And those were the two areas that just in my that one area of the world I could see we lacked. You know, we lacked it. There's been more. I know there's been more writing from the perspective. I don't know if it's actually people that are of this, that race writing it or anything, but I know there's been more. There's just not been enough, I don't think. And I wish we could just raise up people and say, you know, I know you've got a story in you and we want to hear them. You know, how do you get people to write? Because you know they're out there.
Yeah.
And they've got
a
story.
I wanted to be a writer for such a long time, and it was interesting because I loved to write. Like, I loved just the action of putting words together in a sentence or, you know, crafting a paragraph, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I didn't felt, and this was something I was, maybe it was why it took until after college for me to write my first book, but I was always felt insecure about the other part, like the creativity or the storytelling part. And I think that insecurity made me not write. I probably had a couple of bad experiences earlier, people telling me like, oh, you know, you're not creative enough to do that. Or,
oh, yeah.
And so
we all get that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when you hear that in high school or, you know, some of these formative years where you're trying to figure out who you are as a person or what you're capable of, like, it can be really damaging. Mm-hmm. And so it happened in high school. It happened once again in college where I was going to try to apply for a creative writing class in college, and I was told by the instructor that if I hadn't been writing all these years, it was very, very, very unlikely that I would, you know, be able to be admitted or to keep up with the class. And so
Set
me back another 4 years.
Yeah.
And so it was just like these things kept sending me back. And so like what you say, that everybody might have the story inside them that they just need a little encouragement for it to come out, or they need, you know, someone to say, listen, like, you can do this too. It's not something that, you know, is a special talent that's only reserved for, like, a certain group of people. I think we all have creativity inside of us. It just needs to be, you know, encouraged and nurtured and that kind of thing. But, and it all, you know what, it can also be learned too. I feel like there are natural storytellers, natural born storytellers who can just sit down, and it's a lot of the pantsers. Like, they just sit down and the story just flows out of them. And that is certainly not the case for me, but I feel like that storytelling was a skill that I learned, and I learned that from taking classes, reading books, reading craft books, but studying the craft of writing. And so I feel like, you know, all of us can do it. I feel like this creativity is in all of us, and it just has, you just have to have the desire to want to bring it out. And sometimes, you know, opening yourself up to the creativity, you surprise yourself by how creative you can be. And
that's
like
true.
I said, I've had this insecurity all of my life. And so then sometimes when, you know, readers will say to me like, oh my gosh, like, how do you come up with this stuff? Like, your imagination is, you know, so amazing. And I'm like, wow, like, part of me is just like, I can't believe someone's saying that to me when I've been so insecure about it. And
yeah,
it's something
right?
that I felt like I've had to work on. But then, you know, like, people just see the end product and they don't see that. They just think like, wow, like, this is just such an interesting, you know, idea. And you must have such a great imagination. And I was like, I guess I do, but I never, nobody ever thought so when I was young.
Yeah.
Nobody ever thought so when I was a kid or growing up. So.
Well, and it's funny how you said, you know, that it, the two times that somebody, you know, cut you off at the knees,
yeah.
so to speak. Yeah. It makes such a huge impact. And then I guess, you know, that makes it, you kind of climb back in your shell for a while. And even if you stick it out later, you're afraid you're going to get struck off at the neck, you know? So
yeah,
I can understand that. And then, you know, not seeing that, that some people just, I know I do. I always wonder if the story that I'm trying to tell is even worth telling, type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just even, you know, so you have to kind of, and that's why support groups, that's why having a critique group or a writer group, you go to like, I go to RWA or my local RWA or anything like that. It's good because you've got people you can bounce these things off of and make sure that, is it to reassure you that you're on the right track, you know?
Absolutely. And I feel like that's why things like NaNoWriMo is so wonderful, because, you know, at that point, the goal is just to finish a book or just to write 50,000 words. It's not about, you know, trying to evaluate whether it's any good or, you know, it's not about any of that. It's just getting the story out. And sometimes that is the most difficult thing. I mentioned my daughter before, but her school is actually having a NaNoWriMo for fourth graders.
Awesome.
And they've changed the word count requirements to 4,000 instead of 40,000 words. And it, you know, and they had the students sign a contract and everything. It's really a wonderful, wonderful thing. But my daughter is now writing her first book as part of this program, and I couldn't be prouder.
That's exciting.
That's
really cool.
So wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean,
cause I feel like I never had that at all when I was a kid, and like, if I had, I think I would have started writing way sooner than I did.
Gosh, no, when I was a kid, writing was, writing was for dreamers, and that's what I was told. Writing is for dreamers,
and
people who just sit around and dream.
Really impractical, frivolous.
And I still, believe me, I'm still getting that from my mom.
Oh,
but
it's
what it is. But yes, when you start to do something that feels right and it's just right, then you know it's what you're meant to do. And obviously you talk about with your signs, with your health problems and everything else pointing you in the right direction. You feel like you should have gone there in the first place, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you said that about how when you do it and it just feels right. Because for me, it's like I realize that I'm happiest, well, that's not true. I mean, I used to say that, but that was before I had kids. So,
right.
So I'll take that back. Not
my
the happiest,
kid.
But I'm so happy when I'm writing. And I also feel like my truest self when I'm writing. I always say that it feels like this piece of my soul is just clicking into place. And so when you have that feeling, I think that, you know, hold on to that, believe in that feeling, because it's there for a reason. It's not there by accident, I don't feel.
Well, and it's rare because most people, you know, some people go through their whole life without that. They just do their duty and, you know, what they feel like is their duty and their obligations and go through life and never have that where you click for a second and go, oh, this is it. You know, so yeah, it's admirable that you, and it's really admirable that you chose to do, you know, live the life of a writer, which we know at the beginning is definitely not profitable.
Yeah.
So,
and I think
the starving artist.
I have to say that I think my writing career really turned around when I had this realization, because, like, you know, it's so tough being a writer. Like, you get rejected left and right, and then you try and try and try, and you keep getting rejected. And so for, like, 10 years, I think I was always thinking, like, you know, oh, you know, should I go back to the law? Like, what other career should I have? And so I was always thinking about what other things should I be doing. Of course, I was also a full-time mom of three kids, and so that is a full-time mm-hmm. job in and of itself. But then I was just thinking something else. But then there was this one moment in particular where I was like, you know what? I'm a writer. I can't actually change that about myself. It's who I am. And so it's just what I choose to do about it. Like, I can be a writer and not pursue it, or I can be a writer and pursue it. But it's once
makes sense.
Stopped questioning who I was, that once I stopped questioning that, I think that there was a definite sharp turn in my career. And I think I just took myself more seriously. I stopped wasting time having all of those doubts. That's actually mm-hmm. partly that's where the idea for my Forget Tomorrow series came, actually. I was very frustrated with the writing process, and I had an editor friend who said to me, you know what, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you that 5 years from now you would be published and you wouldn't spend so much time worrying about it. And so, you know, the next day I was taking a nap with my son, and I was like, oh, like, wouldn't it be cool if I could send this memory back to myself and I would see myself as a successful writer, then I won't waste so much time worrying about it. And I was like, oh, that would be a cool idea for a book. But but it is, like, I just feel like it takes so much energy to question
mm-hmm.
that about yourself. Like, oh, is this something I should be doing? Oh, am I wasting my time? Oh, am I good enough? Like, that takes an enormous amount of energy. And when I stopped doing that, I was able to put all that energy into the writing and into the books instead.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm totally inspired by you now. I'm feeling your happy,
aww,
positive vibes coming off. Now I can finish NaNoWriMo.
You can do it, Tabitha. You can do it.
And all my NaNo friends out there, you heard it. You gotta turn it into good. Turn it into positive energy. There you go. It's all good.
Are you doing NaNoWriMo this month?
I'm trying. I got about 3,000 words and had family stuff come all up, and, you know, life happens. But I'll get back to it. I may not hit 50,000, but I'll get something down. And you know, it's when you get excited about an idea. You know, I've written before where I'm kind of like, okay, I'm gonna write this. Blah, 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 blah. But when you get really excited about writing a particular idea and you want your fingers to get on that keyboard as fast as you can, you know, and then things get in the way, it just gets really discouraging. So
yeah,
that's where I'm at.
Then
yeah.
You have to remember that however many words you write is that many more words than you had before this month. So
that's
in itself is an accomplishment.
Yeah, that is true. I wish I could just have 7 hours a day to devote to it entirely, but yeah, someday. I keep dreaming.
It would be nice, right? It would be so nice. I hear from other authors, though, who do have that you end up, you know, writing the same amount anyhow because you have that time, but then it's really hard to be really focused and creative for 7 hours.
Yeah. The occasional, you know, writing day where you go off and do it for 7 hours is probably okay, but not every, I don't know. I don't know if
I
can do that every day.
I mean, I've loved, like, the writing retreats that I've done where,
uh-huh.
you know, you go for, like, a four-day weekend and write 20,000 words. Like, that's wonderful.
Right.
But
yeah.
I couldn't do that every day. I just think I would get completely tapped out creatively.
And you probably can't because you've got three kids. So there you go.
Yes. Yes.
So we have a lot to look forward to. We have your third book in the series coming out. And then you've got a whole other YA science fiction series coming out. And as well as two more, you said you already have two more planned in the thrillers, the YA thrillers, right?
No, I have one more. So
one more. One more. Okay.
Out next summer, and that's all I'm contracted for right now. So but yeah.
Are you got big plans for anything else besides those that you got in the brainstorming process?
No, I don't think so. I really need to focus on these books in my contract first.
Yeah.
And that's been plenty to occupy me. And I'm kind of funny. I don't have I don't usually have ideas ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
Well, I do have one idea that's been in my back pocket for a few years now. So I hope I can write that someday. But most of the time, if I'm focused on a book, I'm just, you know, completely.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
every time I start
it.
To write, I think of 20 other stories I could write, and I'm like,
oh, really? Yeah, see, that's why I was always so insecure about myself and the creative process, because all these other people I knew always had like 20 ideas, and I'm always like, no, I just have one, the one I'm working on.
Well, yeah, well, it doesn't matter, because you've got focus, and that's good, and you're getting them done, so. Once you contract him, you got to get him done. So, yeah. Well, let's let everybody tell everybody where we can find you online, other than we have your website, but your social media links are all there on your homepage as well.
Yes, and they're all very simple. Just Pintip Dunn mostly. So Twitter is at Pintip Dunn. Instagram is Pintip _ Dunn. Facebook is author Pintip Dunn. So,
okay.
Nothing fancy, nothing complicated.
And you have a newsletter on your website?
Yes, I do. So, yeah, that would be awesome if anybody wants to sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah, I love getting my newsletters because, you know, I'm not always – well, first of all, Facebook's just terrible. It's just terrible about telling you what's going on with all the pages that you follow. But
yeah.
I love getting those because they always have this little tidbit about something that – maybe isn't shared online, and I love it. So yeah, definitely sign up for the newsletter, people. That's where it's at. That's the best way for authors to get information to you. And on the Amazon page, I would assume that they'd get updates there as well.
Yes, that's true.
And your books are available in all the major retail outlets.
Yeah.
And the brick and mortars. Where's the best? Where are you on the most? Twitter?
Probably Twitter.
Yeah.
These days I'm kind of trying to stay off social media, to be honest, but.
Aren't we all?
Just,
no.
Yes. So, but yeah, you can usually find me pretty easily. I'm not hard to find.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me tonight and be on the show.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really had so much fun being on the show. So
I love your insight about, you know, the diverse books and things, because I haven't been able to talk to anybody else about that yet. So I was
so
happy to have had that conversation. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And we look forward to the rest of the trilogy and your new series. That sounds great. I look forward to your thrillers because, man, that one had me hung. So.
Well, I hope you like the new one. I actually just finished edits on it, and I'm very pleased with it. So
awesome.
I hope you like that one. Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Well, best of luck, and enjoy your evening, and congratulations on the Rita. And
thank you.
Exciting things to come for you.
Thank you so much. You have a great evening, too.
You, too. And thanks, everybody, for listening in tonight. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast on our website, authorsontheair.com. We also have a SoundCloud and iTunes account where it'll be, and you can get it at this link anytime after the broadcast. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at authorsontheair.com, and you can find us just about anywhere else in the social media universe. Thanks to Authors on the Air for this opportunity to talk to you about my favorite books and romance and the hottest authors and young adult, new adult, and adult romance with all of you. And I will see you here next Thursday. Go online to my Facebook page, The Librarian on Authors on the Air, and you can vote for your favorite romance books of 2016 there. Or you can nominate them. Voting comes later. But nominate them there, and I will see you guys next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. I forgot which time zone we were in. I'm Him Eastern, right here on the Librarian Sweet Dreams.